Hello and welcome. This is the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
I'm Derek.
And this is Stank.
Okay, guys. Guess what happened today?
What happened, Ben?
Well, I told you
Star Wars came out.
Yeah, no. Star Wars came out, yes, but that's not... You totally stole my thunder there.
Sorry.
I told you a couple weeks ago I got a new job, and I've been doing this job, and I love it. It's amazing. I have the best job in the world. And today at noon, everybody in the office just quit working, and we went to see Star Wars.
That is so cool.
It was so great. But I also saw it last night, too, with some friends. So I've seen it twice in the last 24 hours.
Oh,
and I didn't have to pay for one of them, which was great. So,
man.
Was the second time? Was it good the second time?
Yes, it was even better the second time.
Really? I might be seeing it with my wife tonight, and I saw it last night. So that's good to know that you can watch it twice and it doesn't get old or anything.
Oh, yeah, it totally holds up.
Good.
Cool.
Good. It's not another prequel.
No. Although... Well, I'm not going to defend the prequels. Never mind.
don't get your hopes up, though, Derek. Derek hasn't seen it yet, so keep your expectations low.
My expectations are at a neutral level.
Yeah, that's good.
When are you
like
seeing
the water,
it, Derek?
I'm seeing it Monday. So
Monday.
I have deleted the Facebook and Twitter apps from my phone. Well, Facebook and Tweetbot. From my phone, I went through a withdrawal this afternoon, and I think I'm past the worst of that, so... So I should be good from here on out to remain spoiler free.
Tank, do you have plans to see it?
Yes and no. My wife wants to watch the original trilogy again before we go see it, which we have seen none of them in yet. So we have to watch all three of those at some point. So it'll probably be in January when we get around to watching it.
Wait, you've never seen them?
No, we've seen them.
Okay.
She wants to watch it again, and we haven't started watching them yet.
Gotcha.
We have to watch all three.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Cool. I was watching them actually for the first time. We rewatched all six actually, the group of friends I went with, and one of the people I was with had not seen any of them ever.
Wow.
And she's like 27 years old, never seen Star Wars. It was amazing.
Did she like them?
She loved them. She was very, very into the third one, like episode three.
Uh-huh.
If you remember, it's like a roller coaster of emotion, man. But anyway, yeah, she really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was good. Really great. So
We also have a Force Awakens Slack or channel in our Slack now, so if any of our listeners want to geek out about the movie, remaining spoiler free for everyone else, you know, you can talk about all the spoilers you want in there and nobody will see them.
Yeah, and with other people who have already seen it already.
Exactly.
That thing really exploded when we created it too. That was a great idea, Derek.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure Derek and I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But I jumped in the channel and I was like, wait, what am I doing? And I jumped right out. So.
We also have another new channel to the Slack this week.
Oh, yeah.
Calvinist Batman's channel. He got his own channel in our Slack. So we have kind of a loose partnership with Calvinist Batman. He came on our show a few weeks ago, and he's got his own podcast show, Calvinist Batman and Friends. You can subscribe on iTunes. It's amazing. He's got guests every week, and really famous popular guests, as well as just regular lay people who want to talk about theology or life and Christianity and Jesus. And so it's really great. One of my favorite podcasts. And so we're kind of moving forward with him a little bit, and gave him a home in our Slack. So we have a hashtag Calvinist Batman channel, where listeners to his show are going to start popping in, and just chat about his show and talk with him and stuff. So
yeah, that's been blowing up about eschatology all afternoon.
Yes, it has. He had Sam Storms this week who talked about amillennialism. So
yeah, he had a really solid episode this week, so it's good to see people following up on that in the Slack straight away. Look forward to what's coming next.
Yeah, he was really looking for a place to interact with his listeners a bit more regularly, and so just kind of, you know, Slack turned out to be a really good fit. So we'll see what happens with it. All right, you guys want to get into some news?
Sounds good.
Let's do that.
Okay, tech you should know this week. Google Maps now has up-to-date gas prices in mobile, which is pretty amazing. So I shop on price a lot when I go looking for gas. So that's pretty neat.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
I used to have those gas price apps back in the day, and they never stayed up to date. It was kind of sad.
But with the power of Google...
Now you can have it.
It sounds like Captain Planet with our powers combined.
No, except Google is just everything, so...
Also this week, the FAA has said that all drones must be registered by February 19th.
That makes sense.
Why does it make sense?
Because they're flying around everywhere and they're taking up the cake space, airspace, layers of airspace. And the government wants to have some control over everything, so why wouldn't they want to have control over drones?
Well, yeah, of course. Why not?
Yeah, you'll get a fine if you don't register it. So important piece of information to know.
Speaking of technology being, regulated and banned and things, a Japanese university this week, Kyoto University, has banned all watches from exams. All watches, not just smartwatches.
Interesting.
Also, fair enough.
What? There's you can't even wear a watch to an exam anymore? What kind of communist world are we living in?
Hear me out. Don't call Japanese communists. That won't necessarily
No, I said world, not Japanese. I don't have anything wrong with Japan or Japanese people. They're amazing.
Every exam room I've ever been in has a clock very clearly placed on the wall.
Okay, that's valid. Next up, you can now make in-app purchases with Android Pay. Also, you can call an Uber from Facebook Messenger this week. This is kind of weird. I don't know why you would want to call an Uber from Facebook Messenger. The Uber app works great.
Yeah, that one's kind of lost on me.
Well, some sort of Facebook and Uber takeover, world takeover plan or something.
Something.
And finally, some Star Wars news, of course, because it's Star Wars week.
Woo!
Number one, lightsabers. You can add a lightsaber to your Facebook profile, and Google's made a game that turns your phone into a lightsaber, which I feel like was one of the first apps on the iPhone back in like 2009 when the App Store came out.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
Oh, man. Good times.
And cool, I haven't seen that.
The Force Awakens soundtrack, the new movie, the soundtrack is on iTunes and Apple Music already. We'll have a link in the show notes. And finally, Star Wars ticket sales. This one blew my mind. Just in the pre-sales alone, they have shattered the record. And I knew they would, but it's the proportion to which they shattered the record which blows my mind. The previous record was held by The Dark Knight Rises at $25 million. Can you guys guess how much the record-breaking Star Wars ticket sales have?
200 million.
120.
You guys are all wrong. They broke the record by four times, 100 million in ticket sales to date.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. It wasn't even released yet.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So my work does data visualization, and one of my coworkers made what they call a visualization over Star Wars movie sales. And he actually showed that with the price of due to inflation, it shows that how much money each movie made went down from the very first one over time. Like everyone has progressively made less.
Hmm.
But this one may end up making more, of course, since it's broken all the records. But
well,
yeah, it was really interesting when it showed like the bars and it was showing how they seemed to be getting better. And they said, now let's account for inflation. And they all get worse. So it was pretty cool.
I think The Force Awakens is literally the most hyped movie of all time. Like, if you think about it, Star Wars is one of the greatest franchises ever, and it's been 32 years since Episode 6, and now the sequel's coming out. Like, I don't think you could possibly hype something more than this movie.
Yeah, this has been very anticipated.
You retweeted somebody this week that said, people have been waiting 32 years for the sequel, for this movie,
yes.
Right, to find out what happens.
Yep.
If you spoil it for someone, may God have mercy on your soul.
And isn't that the truth?
It is so true.
I'm just glad it took over from the Batman movies, because I, to be honest, wasn't a big fan of that Batman franchise. So I'm glad that Star Wars is back on top.
That's right, it is. And that is our news for the week.
This week on Tech You Should Use, we're going to be talking about how to learn to program. One of our Slack members, Daniel Goodman, he sent me a Slack message this week and said, hey, I want to get into programming. Can you help me out? I said, yeah, I'd love to. Why do you want to learn it? And he hasn't responded yet. That's okay. But it gave me the idea. It was like, yeah, it would be fun to do a tech you should use on for anyone who's interested in learning to program. Just some ideas for how to get started. So really, I just have three sites that I've found really useful. And then maybe Ben, he's the other full-time programmer of the group. He can say if he has one or two. So the first one's Code Academy that I would recommend. And it's more geared toward web development. But it's awesome. They have really high-quality videos that explain things in maybe a five-minute chunk. And then they immediately ask you to write out a program that makes you use what they just taught you. And so in the browser, you're coding, and then you hit submit, and it says, you messed up for this reason, or you got it right, and then you move on to the next video. So whenever I was doing that to learn some JavaScript stuff, I was extremely impressed with the quality of the website and how well it has you actually use what you just learned. Because I know from experience, like I read a book and I can just sit down and read for 2 hours, but I never actually put it into practice right away. So this was very helpful.
So true.
The second one that I've been enjoying using for something that I've been learning is called Zenva. Z-E-N-V-A, and these, of course, will be in the show notes. That one is, so Code Academy is free for some of the beginner courses, and then you pay monthly. Zenva has a few free courses, and then it has some course plans where you actually buy a course plan, and then it gives you a set of courses. And so you can just scan through and see what you're interested in. I've been going through a course that gives JavaScript video game development, and that's been fun. And so he does a really good job explaining, and he actually has learned by example as where, well, where you build a website together or you build a game together. And he gives you the code but expects you to like program side by side as he does it. So that's awesome. And then the last one for more people who are experienced, there's a site called pluralsight.com, which is a $30 fee monthly. But they have topics on pretty much everything, and they have like the top people in the field explaining these things. So that's what all the people I know, all the professionals people I work with, and the conferences I go to, they're all learning from Pluralsight. But most of the topics, they have some beginner topics, but there's also a lot of advanced topics in there as well. So those are my three recommendations if you're interested in learning to code. Also, feel free to hit me up directly, and I can give you some more direct feedback based on what you want to learn or help anytime. So, and I'll pass it off to if anyone has any comments on all that.
Yeah, I would throw one other one in there that's been really helpful to me. So first off, definitely echo what you said as far as Code Academy. Pluralsight we had at my last job, and I found it to be really helpful as well. between now and then, Code School has been amazing, especially if you're a beginner. They have like fun little videos and like scenarios of building an app for a company that does a certain thing and solves a certain problem. And it's really helpful just if you're first getting started. And they have a lot of free content out there that you can try out before you start paying if you want to do that. So Code School is one I would definitely recommend.
Yeah. So the one that I've used, one of the ones that I've used before is called Treehouse. The website's teamtreehouse.com. I was using it for a while, probably about 6 months or maybe a bit more. From memory, they teach everything from web design and coding through to iPhone application development, I believe. So I think it's kind of targeted to what do you want to get into, what do you want to do. And then there's a series of videos and tasks that go along with the videos. So it sounds similar to what you're explaining with Code Academy, where as soon as they teach you something, they get you to use that practically and build up a project over time. So that was pretty cool. I think it was about, for the membership level I was on, which kind of gave me access to everything I needed, it was about $25 a month Australian. Mm. So, you know, a bit around a dollar a day, I guess. And I found that good, but yeah, I don't know. Cool. I guess it just depends for some people, like how much you want to pay and what sort of stuff you want to learn, what mm-hmm. type of coding you want to do. So,
yeah, I ran into an article from 9to5Mac maybe a week or two ago. They did an interview, or they heard an interview with Craig Federighi, who's one of the top execs at Apple. And he commented that learning to code is the new push for literacy. You know, like obviously our generation has seen a huge push for literacy, just helping people learn how to read. And he's saying that the next step is teaching everyone how to code. And so maybe we can talk about that more in depth in a later episode, just more programming and learning to code type stuff.
Yeah, I really want to make sure that when we homeschool Rainey, that she has a good education on coding as well as everything else. Kind of excited to figure out how to teach her that. But
all right, so yeah, as you heard, we just gave a lot of different recommendations and different websites. I'd say what I found the most important in coding is it really builds on itself. So you program something and it may take 5 days, but then the next time you want to do that, it'll take 5 minutes or however long. It's just as you learn, the more things you learn, the faster you can do those again. And so really programming, there's so many different ways and there's so many great websites. Really, if you want to learn, just get started. Jump in and recognize that you're not going to build Facebook in a week. But every time you build something, your skills have improved. And I mean, I just got into web development a year ago and I can build websites now. And whereas it took me like 3 months to even get like just a page going. Now I can just throw all these things together. So yeah, really it's just consistency. As you can tell, we all four of us have at least some experience with coding. So if you ever need any help, we'd love for you to hop in the Slack and shoot us a message and we can give some advice from where we're coming from. And one of my other software development friends is in the Slack as well. And so we can all give some coding advice for anyone who needs it. And that's a wrap on Tech You Should Use.
All right, we're going to play a game this week, guys. It's Star Wars week.
This is the first time I haven't run the game, so I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm keen to get into it.
Do you remember our Back to the Future game?
Yeah, my Back to the Future game. Of course I remember it. I had to come up with the questions.
We're going
to
do the same thing with Star Wars. It's Star Wars week, so here's our Star Wars trivia quiz. We'll just buzz in, okay? So yep. I'll ask the questions. This, by the way, is Jay's Star Wars original trilogy quiz.
Is it the same rules as my game? Because my game had awesome rules.
Yeah, your
with
game
bonus
did
questions
have awesome
and
rules.
Extra points.
And yeah, we're not going to do extra points or anything. It's way too complicated for me. Okay. So we'll just have buzz-ins. And Derek, since you're the furriest, yours will be the Wookiee call. yes, that's perfect. That's and awesome. Tank, we'll
I thought
give
it was
you,
more like...
We'll give you your too. Best bot, since you're the programmer, either R2-D2 or C-3PO.
Oh, dear. How was that impressive?
Okay, yeah, nice. That was great. We're going with that. That's it. And then Craig, you know, we're going to give you some Yoda. How about that? Any Yoda
yes.
is
yours. Okay.
Okay, perfect. All right, this is great. This is going to be great. All right. So, first question. Question number one. Buzz in if you know the answer. Why do sand people, the Tusken Raiders, walk in single file line? I heard Derek, the Wookiee.
To hide their numbers.
That is the correct answer.
Yes.
Except I didn't even read the answers. There are, this is multiple choice. So if you know the answer, you can go ahead and buzz in if you want to just guess. But I'm going to read the answers also. Okay. All right. Number two. What was the name of Luke Skywalker's childhood friend that died attacking the first Death Star? Is it A, Wedge Antilles? Is it B, Jack Porkins? Is it C, Ace Azamine? Or is it D, Biggs Darklighter? I heard Derek.
It's Wedge.
Derek says A, Wedge Antilles. He is incorrect.
Answer or must?
All right, Craig.
Is that sounding anything like Yoda, by the way? I'm haven't done my close. Yoda impression for a long time.
Not really.
Okay, that's all right. I'll just say Yoda from now on. Is it B? I think it's B.
B, Jack Porkins is incorrect. Tank,
oh,
do you have
dear.
An answer?
Briggs, the last one.
The last one is Biggs Darklighter. Do you want to go with that?
What was the other? What's the other options?
The other one is Ace Azamine, and the other two have been proven wrong.
All right, we'll go with what I first went with, Biggs.
All right, Biggs Darklighter is correct.
Wow,
yeah.
Nice.
Good work, Tank.
All right, so we got 1 point Derek, 1 point Tank. Question three. How many bounty hunters did Vader address on the Star Destroyer Executor?
Oh.
Is it A, 5, B, 8, C, 6, or D, 7?
Yoda.
Yoda. Craig.
Sorry, I have to, you know, thinking and doing impressions at the same time is not a multitasking skill I have. I think it's 5.
He thinks it's 5, and he's incorrect. Derek, the Wookiee.
I'm going to try 6.
Okay, Derek answers 6, and that is correct.
Yes.
All right, Derek, so we got you Derek have watched 2. Star Wars too many times. It's
we
official.
Got Derek 2 and Tank is at 1, Craig's at 0. Okay, number 4. What was the serial number of the stormtrooper who was being contacted by his superior in A New Hope?
Wow. I've definitely been asked this question before, and I still have no idea.
Is it A, TK-421? Is it B, TK-412? Is it C, TK-422? Or is it D, TK-411? You're never going to get this. Derek, what is it?
I think it's TK, the first one, TK-421.
TK-421. Believe it or not, that's correct.
Yes, that sounded familiar.
Good job.
I would have never gotten it without multiple choice.
All right, we got Derek on 3, Tank on 1, Craig on 0. All right, number whatever we're on. This Imperial probe droid was also known by what name? And there's a picture, so I'm going to send that in our Skype chat as I read you the answers, okay? So is it A, Reconner, B, Probot, C, Reconobot, or D, Infiltrator?
Sir, if I may venture an opinion.
Yes, of course
you can.
That's
a different
clip. C-3PO, what's up?
The prototype, the B, whatever it was.
B, Probot?
Probot.
All right, B, Probot. Let's see. That's correct.
Yeah. Nice.
Good work, Tank.
We got Derek 3, Tank 2, Craig 0. Craig, you got to get in this, man.
No, man, I'm reading the article. I'm crap at Star Wars games. We've established that.
Oh, man. All right. Number 6. What was the greeting used by Jabba's major, Domo Bib Fortuna, when first meeting Luke Skywalker? Is it A, Ichuta? Is it B, I want a Wonga? C, Utini? Or D, I can't say that on the podcast.
Really?
Yeah, I really can't say it on the podcast.
Yoda.
Craig.
Is it B?
I want a Wonga is correct.
Yes.
Nice.
I was trying to find a 3PO quote.
Well, was the last one like Bantha Pudu or something?
No, it was. It had an explicit word, which I won't repeat.
Okay, well then we'll just move along that.
That's from episode 1, right? That Bantha Pudu thing. That's what Annie's boss says to him.
No, that was one in the later in like episode 4 or 5 as well. It was something that Jabba said in one of the first.
All right, I'm pretty sure it happens in the marketplace scene in episode 1 as well.
Oh yeah, it does.
Or maybe it's in the pod race. I don't know. Anyway.
All right, so quick scoreboard here. And this one we'll do a bonus here. Scoreboard is Derek 3, Tank 2, Craig 1, okay? So this bonus will count for 2 points because it's hard.
Yes.
And Craig, if you get this, you will be tied for the lead.
What an amazing
Derek, if you get this, we should just end the game now because you're going to win. all right. Question number 7, I think. What station was Luke planning on going to pick up power converters? Is it A, Bespin, B, Mos Eisley, C, Toshi, or D, Naboo?
Yoda.
Craig.
I think it's B.
B, Mos Eisley, is incorrect. Derek the Wookiee.
It's C.
C, Toshi, is correct.
Yes.
Derek advances to
Derek
6 points.
Derek smashed the game.
You let the Wookiee win.
And you know what's funny about that? Derek is the only one of us who hasn't seen the latest one. No, Tank hasn't seen it either.
I haven't seen it either. Right.
Derek, hurry up and see it so we can talk about it with you.
Yes, yes, I wish. I want to. I'm going to jump on that Slack as soon as I see that.
All right, so our final score is Derek at 6, Tank at 2, and Craig at 1. So, Derek, you win the game.
Woo!
Congratulations. You are the Master Jedi.
Might be the first game I've lost.
You graduated from Wookiee to Jedi. How awesome is that?
Yes, I am a Wookiee Jedi, the most powerful of them all. I've never won a game on here before, so this is a big moment for me.
Nice. Welcome to the club. No, I don't think I've won a game either, actually.
I've never played on here, a game on here before, so this is a devastating moment for me.
Yeah, you usually run the games, don't you?
Played a game and got destroyed all in the one day.
I think Tank has won all of them, pretty much.
Mostly, yeah. Yes.
I think so, too.
All right, that wraps up our Star Wars quiz game. Now let's move into Theology from the Headlines. And this week, Craig brought the topic, so I'm going to let him intro it.
Okay, so this week's topic flows on a little bit, I guess, from what we were talking about last week. Last week, we had a discussion on internet neutrality, and in particular, we were looking at the idea of censorship, and would it be appropriate for governments to step in and start censoring material that is clearly either criminal or involving terrorism or super divisive or whatever. And we kind of just discussed some of the pros and cons of that and when that would be helpful and when that might have pitfalls associated with it, I guess, from a Christian standpoint as well, in terms of freedom of speech and that kind of thing. This week, I thought it'd be interesting to bring up an article that I found on Desiring God, which is written by Philip Holmes, entitled One Voice on Christian Social Media. And it's basically talking about Rosaria Butterfield as using her as an example. And basically, actually says in the article, she's not really on social media, but she does have a national platform. She's, just for people who don't know, she was a postmodern professor at a university in the 90s. She was also pretty heavily involved in the homosexual community. She was a lesbian herself and advocated strongly for homosexuality. And then in 1999, God stepped in and changed her life called her to himself, and she became a Christian. And so she's written some stuff since then. Like I said, has kind of grown a national platform for herself, speaking on issues like that from a Christian perspective. And one of the things the article says is, since the advent of the internet, everyone has a platform. Long gone are the days when large platforms were earned and reserved for scholars and experts. Whether the platform is a blog, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or all of the above, people who would have historically been silenced or ignored are able to spread their ideas and opinions to a larger audience. So it says, celebrities and artists who are believers have long wrestled with this question: how open should I be about my faith? Should I reveal my values and convictions, or reserve them for private conversations in order to build relationships? Which is something that we've talked about a little bit in the past. I guess I wanted to get you guys, just as a starting point, there's another quote I want to read later on and get a little bit more thought on that. But what do you guys think about that? In terms of, as Christians, how open should we be in our online interactions about our faith? How prominent should that be? As opposed to just sort of being quote-unquote normal, like a normal person, and sort of letting our Christianity show through naturally rather than putting it sort of really front and center and obvious. What do you think?
I feel like this one's a little bit broader, too, even than social media, because she mentions, basically being the same person in all of the settings you're in. So, like, in your small group of Christian friends, are you, really open about the Lord and what he's doing in your life and how good he is? And then in your, with your coworkers or, when you're in public, are you just a totally different person and you only talk about sports and the Star Wars movie or, like, whatever, Not that those things are bad, but just, are you being two different people in two different groups of friends? And I think they applied it to online versus offline, which is great. But yeah, it's definitely broader than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, to answer your question, Craig, I think one of the ways that I've described it to people is that I want to, whenever I love someone or something, for example, my wife comes up in conversation all the time. It's just natural. I live with her. I'm around her all the time. I love her. I experience things with her. It's very natural for me to be talking to someone and then be like, oh yeah, Michelle and I were doing this the other day. And we see that when we like when I talk about my wife and I talk about how awesome she is and how much I love her and all the things I do with her, people naturally have a higher view of my wife, just because if I see something as wonderful and beautiful, they see it as well, just by extension from the way I describe her, especially if they had known nothing about her. So the way that I say that, I want to naturally bring up Jesus and my following him and my belief in him is similar to the way that I want to bring up Michelle. Like, I want the conversation not to be like, all right, we've known each other for 6 months. Sit down.
Now I can finally tell them about my wife, Michelle. We've known each other for 6 months.
Exactly.
We would all think that was so weird.
And so I want Jesus to come up naturally in conversations, just like kind of like how here when we talk about technology, and naturally what starts to come to mind is how we view technology in a Christian worldview. I want to make that a practice, in the sense where I'm not turning every conversation, of course, to like awkwardly maneuvering it in. But just how I'm not like trying to sneak in Michelle into conversations. It's just like that's where my brain naturally goes, because I experience her all the time, like we're around each other. And so for the way I kind of understand making much of Jesus in a public place naturally is, the more I know him and the more I experience him and the more I see the world through him, the easier it will be for me to see natural reasons to talk about him. Yep. And that takes practice, because everyone believes my wife exists. Not everyone believes Jesus exists. So mm-hmm. It's not a perfect metaphor, but that's kind of where I come from. And through that, through those conversations and just making it obvious that I'm going to talk about Jesus, I believe and have experienced people then begin to bring him up as well and ask questions and stuff. So that's where I would come from on that question.
And it's a little bit more difficult to, well, not only because everyone believes in your wife and not everyone believes in God, but the culture in I feel evangelicalism nowadays is very much the preach the gospel and if necessary use words mentality, mm-hmm. which I was a part of for a while until I came around to my senses, and I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like in everyday life. There's a guy that I find really encouraging at my work who is, he'll just randomly bust out with the gospel in some random situation, and it fits perfectly, and he's just so joyful about it. That's inspiring to me to figure out how to really make that a greater part of my life, as far as making it casual and constant.
I actually had a youth pastor at a church I used to go to tell me one time that he believes preach the gospel if necessary, use words. Or preach the gospel always if necessary, use words. And I, at the time, didn't realize. But now I look back on it and I'm like, oh, man. Like,
yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Because you can't preach the gospel without using words.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
So, anyway.
And I think just going back, they're all good points. I think just going back to what Tank said about his wife, that's a really helpful way to think of it in some ways. I think the snag would, like you picked up on one of the snags with that, one of the issues people would have with that, Tank, which is some people don't believe in Jesus, whereas people aren't necessarily going to doubt that your wife exists. I think
they might.
Another, actually, funny story. Do you want to hear a story?
Sure.
My question, when you guys say you want to hear a story, my first question always is, wait, how long is it?
Yeah. No, it's not long. So I started working, the first place I ever worked when I finished my degree and finished my extra year of film school that I did after my degree. I was working there for a while, had some really great workmates and bosses and stuff, and they organized like a work dinner. So we all went out, we were all going out to this restaurant for dinner as a team. And no one had ever met my wife yet, but I'd spoken about her, like Tank was saying. I'd talked about her in general conversation and just mentioned. And they were like, do you really have... She was late because she had to drive from where she was working, which was like over an hour away from where the restaurant was, after work. And so she was running late and everyone else was at the restaurant already. And I had this empty seat next to me. And they were like, are you sure she exists? Have you just been having us on all this time? And she had, like, the year before, or when we were still at university, she'd got one of those free, like, photography sessions with a friend where it's, like, a really expensive photography thing, and you go to a studio and they do the makeup and whatever and put you on a weird old-school couch and take professional photos of you. She'd got that done with a friend because she had a voucher for it or something. And then, so I had, like, a little business card-sized photo from that session in my wallet that she'd given me. And so I pulled it out, and it had her name written down the side, which is really corny and ridiculous. I don't know why they did that. And so I'm like, no, seriously, she does exist. This is what she looks like. You'll be able to recognize her when she walks through the door. And she looked like a supermodel. Like, it was an amazing photo. And so I was pretty proud passing it around. They're all just like, yeah, right, this is not your wife. You have to be kidding. And actually, then she walked in the door, and I was like, yes, vindicated. So that was cool.
I had a similar experience when I was engaged to Anna. I would show pictures of her and be like, no, this is not, this person's not really engaged to you.
It's a good feeling.
Yes, she
it's
is.
Okay. It's okay to know that you're punching above your weight. It's
yeah. I'm okay with being the reacher.
Anyway, so yeah, no, the other thing I think, Tank, that people would throw up is, or that I would sort of throw into that mix is just that even if people, like you said, some people aren't willing to believe Jesus exists. The other issue for people is that if he does exist, they need to be accountable to him. And therefore, they don't need to be accountable to your wife. Do you know what I mean? So it's easy for you to speak about your wife in conversation, and other people are likely to feel neutral towards her or positive towards her if they've met her. Whereas with Jesus, instantly you say the word Jesus, people think of religion, they think of rules, they think of things they can't do, they think of sin, and so I think when you're talking about public relationships with non-Christians, part of the issue is how do we communicate in a way that doesn't hide away who Jesus is and what he calls us, how he calls us to live, but also doesn't ram a set of rules down people's throats so that that reinforces the idea that Jesus is just about constricting your life and making your life harder. And so one of the things that this article talks about is that for Rosaria, like, she thinks that consistency is the key. So kind of like what Ben was saying before, it is broader than just the online space. But she found that she was getting really angry when she sort of became a Christian and started writing from a Christian perspective. She got some very, very angry, she got a particularly angry email. She thought, this is the kind of thing that they're writing to me as if they are never going to see me, or do you know what I mean? Like, they're writing as if it doesn't matter how they talk to me is kind of how it comes across. And so instead of arguing with someone over social media that she doesn't actually know and getting just as heated in response or whatever, the article says that she actually invited them around to her house for dinner that week and said, I don't know you, but I'm willing to talk about this with you. How about we discuss this as human beings and respect each other and that kind of thing. And so she says that Christians don't have to water down their message in order to be effective, and that our private speech should be consistent with what we communicate in public, and that scripture should dictate that. I think what we're sort of talking about here as well is also just the idea of how do we do this practically? Like, how do we live out our Christianity, particularly online, because this is a tech-related podcast, and that's a space that we're all on all the time. And we've all seen the comics about, I can't go to bed because there's someone who's wrong on the internet, and needing to feel like we're saying the right things or standing up for Christianity enough or all that kind of thing. There's another part of the article where it says, among Christians, there are two extremes, and this is what I want to get your thoughts on next. The first extreme is the Christians who passionately and ferociously share their convictions every time they're around someone who disagrees with them. They look for opportunities to hijack conversations to let everyone know how they feel. You start by asking them about the weather and they start talking about abortion. You ask them for the time and they start ranting about feminism destroying the church. To top it off, they lack tenderness, kindness, and love for the people they're engaging, and they fail at doing it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience so that when you're slandered, those who revile your good behavior may be put to shame, which is from 1 Peter. Then she says the other extreme are people who are only willing to share their convictions in a safe space among friends, which is what we're talking about. Privately and being comfortable, spending a lot of time getting to know people before you share stuff. They rarely ever speak publicly about Jesus. And then even if they're asked a direct question about something controversial, they refuse to give a straight answer, even though the Bible's pretty clear. She says both of those approaches are wrong. So her next statement basically is that the public and private voice of Christians should be one. We should speak passionately and tenderly, but we also shouldn't hijack conversations. So I guess, how do we practically put that into play? How do we, as Christians, and this is kind of plays into what we talked about, I think, with Calvinist Batman and online persona versus offline persona. But what are some, I guess, tips or things that you guys keep in mind in online interactions, or things that you think you need to work on in terms of, or even just biblical input in terms of how to go about that? How to, be seasoned with salt, or that kind of thing. Shine your light without Bible bashing people and blinding them for the sake of it.
I would say that actually was the most convicting part of the article for me. And even just thinking more about it right now, it's kind of interesting, at least for me personally. I feel like I'm in the first group around my family, and I'm in the second group around my coworkers, which is kind of weird. I don't know why. But maybe it's the whole, like, earning the right to be heard, knowing people for longer makes you feel like you can talk about the things of the Lord with them or something. I don't know. That seems to be at least my natural tendency. Maybe that's the way it is for you guys and for others. I don't know. But for whatever reason, like, when I'm around my family, I'll just, like, catapult the conversation into spiritual things whenever I, can. And then when I'm around coworkers, I'm just like basically a coward, and I'll just say it, like, that's because it's true. That's something that I've like thought through a lot lately and just struggled with, and obviously want to repent of that and continue repenting of it and change it. But yeah, that was super convicting for me. Because we want to model grace and truth just like Jesus, like, John 1:14, I think, says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen His glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." And I think we tend to oppose those, but in Jesus, they weren't opposed. They were both perfectly and fully there. So Jesus never compromised truth for friendship with sinners, and He also never compromised friendship with sinners for personal holiness, which is amazing. I mean, literally, behold our God. He's amazing. That's what I would say about that initially. What do you guys think?
So I found that my boldness really depends on how I start the relationship. So if we're in the beginning phase of just getting to know each other, the acquaintance phase, and really like maybe the first time or second time that I've met someone and I'm actually having a conversation with them, if during that time I'm bold enough to say, I follow Jesus, I go to the church, or I go to church here, whatnot, do you go to church, do you follow Jesus, and just have that conversation, it's not terribly awkward. Most of the time they're Christians, at least where I'm from, or at least they say they are culturally Christian. And if not, I mean, it's, what's the big deal? They're not going to hate you and not want to talk to you anymore because you said that you're a Christian and follow Jesus. Mm-hmm. But what I've found is when I've established that and that party knows I'm a Christian and they know that I follow Jesus and am serious enough about following Him to know that I'm going to talk about Him in our very first meeting, it kind of establishes a precedence of boldness to where our next meeting or our two meetings later, the person already knows I'm a Christian and he knows I'm likely going to bring it up in conversation. So it's easy to talk about Jesus and so that's not really a practical way as far as what I talk about later. Mm-hmm. But once it's been done, it's just so much more natural. So I have a lot of experience with this in two areas. One of them is I help out with international groups on campus. And because I'm helping out, like the group is called International Student Ministry, they know that everybody helping them is a Christian in a sense. Mm-hmm. And so it's very easy. They already know I'm a Christian. They pretty much expect me to talk about Jesus. And so I find ways to talk to my international friends all the time about Jesus. And it's not awkward. We have great conversations. One of my friends and I are actually going through the book of John right now with one just through all that. And then a second case was when I met all of my coworkers in person in San Francisco. Like, we all went on a trip together. Normally we work separate. And for whatever reason, Jesus gave me a boldness that I never have. And I was finding out spiritually where all of them were at, because it was like our first time to really meet in person. And so we were having these conversations. And from that, I've had so many good conversations with my coworkers since then. And so that's just one practical tip, is start off not abrasive in your face, but just like I would tell someone I'm married right away. Like that's one of the first things I would tell them. So it makes sense that I also, the most important part of my life is following Jesus. It makes sense that that's another thing that I bring up first. So,
out yourself early. That's the principle I just learned. Mm-hmm. Out yourself early. That's the principle I just learned.
Yeah, pretty much. Because once you've done it, then it's not as awkward the second time. And then it's not as awkward the third time. And then you get to where it's comfortable with
that
great.
Person. Super practical and helpful. I know what I said was not practical in the slightest, but I'm glad that you came in and gave us something practical, because that is really helpful, even for me. So,
and there would actually be a book that I would recommend along this topic called Tactics by Greg Kokel.
Yes.
This is a great book. I know some of you out there may be familiar with Greg Kokel, and if you're pre-sup, he might leave a bad taste in your mouth, but that's okay, because this book is still great. he's more of a, just to explain, he's more of an evidential, I don't know if you call that classical apologetics or what, for Christianity. And so you can have differences of opinion on that, but this book is,
you just blew someone's mind. One person listening to this is like, wait, there's different ways to do apologetics. What?
Yes.
And then they're like,
look up presup sometime. Presuppositional apologetics.
It's good to look at different options. I really enjoyed Tim Keller's Reason for God, and that's not presup.
Really. Oh, okay. So yeah.
There's some great ones out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I will say that each definitely has their place. And as a Christian, it's worth looking into evidential apologetics just as kind of like a solidifier of your own faith. Yeah. But anyway, moving on. Tactics, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions, is really about helping you navigate a conversation with someone who does not think the same way as you do. And it involves asking them a lot of questions and really getting them to talk so that you can feel more comfortable understanding them where they sit, and then be able to also inject your own opinion or your own belief.
Yeah, two things. I love Greg Kokel. He's great. Mm-hmm. I'm presup too, so I guess you can love him and be presuppositional. But anyway.
Yeah. I cut my teeth apologetically on Greg Kokel. I love Greg Kokel.
That's awesome. Yeah, super smart too. Just one really practical thing from the book, which you could use literally tomorrow after you hear this. He says, if you can find a way to ask two questions, just two, not 15, just two, then it'll drive your conversation into a more naturally spiritual area. And they are, one, what do you mean by that? And two, how did you come to that conclusion? And when I heard this for the first time, it was in an interview with him and I think Todd Wagner from Watermark in Dallas. It's a big church there. and he just introduced those two questions to me, and I was like, oh, that's really easy. I could do that. And literally, it's changed everything. I remember on Twitter, actually, I asked one of my students. I used to do K-Life where I was from in Oklahoma. And one of my students tweeted something about, I don't know, about Jesus or God or something. And I was like, huh, that's weird. I don't know about that. And literally all I did was tweet back to him, what do you mean by that? That's it. Mm-hmm. And then he sort of explained in a couple of tweets. And then this was months ago, like a week ago, he direct messaged me, same guy, and was like, hey, do you have a second? I'd love some help with something I've been struggling with lately. And then he started to tell me about how he's in college now and there's lots of nominal Christianity and he doesn't know what to do because his heart breaks for the lost people around him and people who think they know Jesus, but they don't. And I was like, whoa, like this is awesome. And then later in the conversation, he said, by the way, because I told him the same thing, just ask, what do you mean by that? And how did you come to that conclusion? And he said, just so you know, when you asked me that question on Twitter, it changed everything. It changed the way I read the Bible, because I don't just want to know what it says. I want to know why it says what it says and how it applies to me. And it's crazy. And like, I didn't do that. That was the Holy Spirit. But that's cool. Amazing that he would use us in that just with a simple question. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also, second thing, Francis Schaeffer, I heard this recently and it blew my mind. Francis Schaeffer once said, if you gave him somebody to share the gospel with and he said, or you said to him, you have an hour, he would spend 55 minutes asking questions of the person and just letting them talk and tell him about their own situation in life. And then he'd spend the last 5 minutes basically translating or contextualizing the gospel to that person specifically, mm-hmm. which is crazy too, because he's one of the greatest apologists of our time, and he would spend more time listening to them than he would declaring the truth necessarily, although he would also do that, you know. It's just cool. Different way to think about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the main thing that I would say is important in talking about God with other people and avoiding the unnecessarily caustic, you know, side of things is really think about loving the person and caring for the person in your response. If you're caring about the person in when you're talking to them, that really changes a lot as far as your mental state. You're no longer defending yourself. You now want to love that person as best you can by teaching them the truth and sharing God's love with them.
Yeah, that's excellent. And that brings us back basically to the latter part of the article, which is arguing for, I guess, less online conversation around potentially controversial issues and more face-to-face conversation. And as Derek just said, the way the article puts it is when we get to know someone and love someone offline, so when we're having the face-to-face interaction, we know them on a real personal level, that's when we're able to loosen the soil in order to be able to plant the seeds of hope and truth. If you're not doing that, if there's no opportunity to actually show the person that you love them, then the likelihood is that they will just feel like you are trying to plant seeds into soil that isn't ready for that yet. Do you know what I mean? So there's mm-hmm. there's that thing of loving the person loosens the soil, which then enables you to plant the seeds. So just in terms of getting practical, and this is maybe as much for me as it is for everyone else, I would have to second Ben's comment from a little while ago when he said that he tends to be the first option, like the sort of loud and proud with his family and I guess more quiet or reserved with coworkers. I would say mm-hmm. that applies to me too, although I'm more loud and proud with people I go to church with. So I'm more happy to get into theological discussions with people I go to church with and my immediate family. My extended family and coworkers and stuff would be the market that I sort of shy away from. And so that's something I also need to repent and get better at. Something I really enjoyed in this article was a line that said, it was from Matthew 10, when asked controversial questions or when controversial topics come up, we should be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. It's Matthew 10:16. Christians are called to be humbly unashamed before a holy God and a world dying without the gospel. And that sentence, that one sentence really stands out to me because of the phrase humbly unashamed. If we're just humble, then we're not proclaiming the truth. And if we're just unashamed, then we're bashing people with the truth. If we can be humbly unashamed, then we've got, dare I say, the balance that enables truth to be proclaimed and people to be able to be receptive to that because of the way that it's being conveyed to them. And so in terms of practical stuff for me, and I don't know if this is a good place to end it, maybe not, maybe it is. I guess what I'm going to try and take out of this is Christmas is coming up. I'm going to be seeing family, probably most of us will. I'm going to try and challenge myself to put some of this into practice. So particularly with my extended family, who I don't see very often, some of whom aren't, or many of whom aren't believers, is loving those people this Christmas in my interactions with them, speaking to them on a personal level, finding out where they're at, and then trying to share, plant those seeds of hope and truth in those conversations. And that might be using the tips, like the two questions that Greg Kuchel used. It might also be, like Tank said, using some of those things about sort of starting the conversation off early in terms of talking about Jesus in some way. But that's something that I want to challenge myself with, and I think it'd be great for all of us, particularly if we've got non-Christian family and friends.
All right, let's move into Recos. Craig.
Yeah, I have one this week. I am recoing the episode of Coram Deo podcast. I know we do this a lot, but he had another cracking episode this week on growing in knowledge and all discernment. So biblical discernment, Philippians 1. Really enjoyed that episode. Thought it was really, really good. So definitely check that out.
Derek? I forgot to recommend this when it was actually relevant, but the Reformed Gamers a couple weeks ago actually responded to our episode on morality and gaming, and I really enjoyed their discussion on the matter, so I highly recommend going over and listening to that. And secondly, Craig Federighi was on the talk show with John Gruber this week, which was amazing. Also, John Siracusa. Like, Craig was on there for like a half hour talking about what the deal was with Swift. And as a non-coder, I understood some of it, and most of it I just enjoyed them talking about nerdy things. Same when John Siracusa was on. John Siracusa is probably my favorite person ever to talk about things that I have no idea what he's talking about. So it's delightful. It's 3 hours, so it's a bit of an investment. But if you want to know more about Swift, check that out.
People are going to hear that it's 3 hours, so whatever part, and they're going to be like, what? I've already been listening to you guys for an hour. Tank, do you have a reco?
Yep. So in keeping in line with the programming recommendation, there is an MMO out there, massive multiplayer online game, called Screeps, and it is played by writing code. So you have your little minions, and you write JavaScript or anything that compiles into JavaScript to tell them to do things. So I think they have a pretty good tutorial if you have no experience coding. I've never done it, so that's why I didn't recommend it, but it's definitely something to check out, and I plan on trying to check it out this week because it sounds fun to play a game by writing code. So that's my recommendation. It's your minions do stuff even while you're not online. You have to write code to make them constantly be doing stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
My reco this week, go see The Force Awakens and share the gospel with some of your lost friends by loving on them and telling them about Jesus. Okay, guys. Guys.
Yeah.
Guys.
Guys, thank you. For mentioning us on Twitter this week.
All right. This is episode 19, guys.
That's kind of amazing.
Next we've spent a lot of time doing this.
Yeah, we have.
Especially Derek.
Hey, we should tell them what's going on next week. So next week we are doing, or actually it's going to be released later this week. We're going to be doing a little Christmas show, and then we won't be back till after the new year. So yeah, that's what's going on. We'll
look
be releasing a little mini episode later this week.
And in the meantime, if you would like to connect with us, you can do so in our Slack channel. And we have, again, our new channel with Calvinist Batman. You can get his attention and all of his time if you want. And you can get there at slack.techreformation.com. Fill out that web form, hit send, it'll send you an email, and you follow the steps from your email address.
And you can follow us on Twitter at TechReformation. Feel free to tweet us to your followers. Let them know that we exist so that they can follow us too.
And check us out on Facebook and also at our website, which is techreformation.com.
Or feel free to email us at ask@techreformation.com. Comments, feedback, questions, whatever. We'd be happy to hear from you.
And don't forget to review us on iTunes, leave us a rating, and recommend us on Overcast. If you like this music you're listening to, it's by Matthew Parker. Thank you, Matthew Parker. You are amazing. This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. My reco this week. go see the Force Awakens. Dang it, let me do that again.
I'm trying to figure out a pun to the Fork Awakens.
Dang like it.
The spoon side and the knife.
The Fork Awakens.
The dark side of the spoon?
Yes, yeah.
Pink Floyd knows what's happening on the dark side of the spoon.
There we go.